Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast. My name is Darren McDonald, the Mario Mendoza of the broadcasting world. It is Tuesday, February 20th. Spring training. Pitchers and catchers have reported. The position players have reported. The actual spring training games are going to be starting on Thursday. Baseball is back. But also the offseason is still here, and we're going to talk about that. With me to talk about it is my colleague Steve Adams. How you doing?
I am doing wonderful. Chuckling as always at your little introductory statements that I'm never prepared for, but always get a little smirk out of. So well done.
Start it with a bang.
Yeah.
Thank you. Get people pumped because we're going to talk about now about how nothing is happening. So yeah. Get pumped, people. Yes. We try not to talk too much on this podcast about stuff that has not yet happened because we record it on Tuesdays and it comes out on Wednesdays after our lovely editor, Kyle, tinkers with it a little bit and makes us sound less dumb. So, yeah, there's a bit of a delay there, and so it's possible that the things that we say might be a little bit outdated, but I think we can't really ignore the elephant in the room right now, which is that the story of this late part of the offseason is that the Boris Four, as they have they've now come to be known, are just sitting there here as mid-February is gradually becoming late February. We got Blake Snell. We got Jordan Montgomery. We got Matt Chapman. Cody Bellinger, guys that were all predicted for like nine-figure deals coming into the offseason, just sitting there. So this has led to all kinds of questions. People are like, are these guys going to have to take short-term deals? Should there be some sort of like transaction deadline? All kinds of, people wondering, trying to figure out why this is going on. You wrote a piece for the site this week, Steve, trying to figure out who could sign Cody Bellinger to a short-term deal. It's a great piece, like 10,000 words or something like that.
Not quite
10,000. But I recommend the readers check it out because it's great. After writing that, what are your thoughts? Who's going to get the deal done, short-term, long-term? How do you think this plays out?
So, I mean, I think at the time, Tom Ricketts hadn't made his comments that the Cubs owner hadn't made his comments that he made over the weekend. And up until, for those who kind of, didn't see what Ricketts said over the weekend, he basically said, it's common knowledge, I guess, that, kind of a Scott Boras go-to move, or really just like a lot of agents for high profile guys. A lot of these deals, like when you're talking $150 million, et cetera, are done like more at the ownership level. A lot, especially like higher profile agents, your Scott Boras, Casey Close for Thixell, like some of the real big names are going to go directly to the ownership and kind of, negotiate with them. And Tom Ricketts, the Cubs owner or chairman, basically said, I don't want to undermine my GM by negotiating these deals. So like that hasn't been something that I've done. And it kind of threw some cold water on the possibility of, Bellinger going back there. When I wrote the thing, I think I wrote within the conventional wisdom kind of has seemed like, especially as a short-term deal becomes increasingly something you might consider, that the Cubs are just really that perfect on-paper fit. They have top prospects coming up at first base and in center field with Michael Busch, who they traded for from the Dodgers, and Pete Crow Armstrong, who they got from the Mets a few years ago in the Javier Baez deal, and is now one of the top prospects in baseball. But neither of those guys have proven much at the big league level yet. You want to give them opportunity, but you also want to have a safety net in place for both. Some kind of short-term deal with Bellinger being able to opt out next year, maybe 2 years down the line. I think if he does go short term, it would be something with an opt out next offseason. But that seems to make a lot of sense. And then Tom Ricketts comes out and kind of throws some cold water on that. It's difficult, really. And we get asked about this constantly, like, where is he going to sign? If we knew the answer to that, we would be the prescient savants of the world. I mean, Scott Boras doesn't know the answer to that, and Cody Bellinger doesn't. I did throw out some teams that I think make sense on a short-term deal, with my favorite kind of like pet one that I think people kind of tilt their heads at, but being the Royals, which sounds a little silly and a little ridiculous, but then again, I think people would have thought it sounded a little silly to suggest that the Royals were going to sign Bobby Witt Jr. for almost $300 million this offseason and spend over $100 million through their first, you know, seven free agent signings. And they did that anyway. Bellinger would be a really nice upgrade over any of the outfielders they have in house. It would be a match that, to me, harkens back kind of to the Twins signing Carlos Correa a couple of off seasons ago. Something that heading into the 2021 to 2022 offseason, if you had said, you know, yeah, this is going to end with the Twins signing Carlos Correa, people would have looked at you like you were insane, because Correa was the top free agent or one of the top two free agents on the market that offseason. I think there is just a sense that some team that isn't really viewed as a primary suitor for Bellinger might have to step up here and kind of enter this mix, because you've seen a lot of teams, and not just the GMs necessarily, but in some cases, like with the Cubs ownership, kind of throw some cold water on the fact that, like, yeah, we're more or less done with our offseason shopping here. And if those comments prove true, then it's not going to be one of the teams that everyone kind of expected heading into the offseason. I tend to, since he's the youngest of these four guys, think that he's the likeliest to do a short-term deal. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, with his age, he's the most plausible of the four guys out there. But I think the problem is that, you know, when a player pivots to a shorter term deal, they're looking to compensate by getting more on an annual basis. Yep. And so many teams now at this stage in the offseason are either way over the luxury tax, which means that in some cases paying double. With, you know,
more teams, than double.
Yeah, more than double. Yeah. So like with the Yankees at their CBT level, you're talking 110% tax rate. And yep. So if they wouldn't fit Bellinger on their roster now anyway, but just Snell, if they wanted to get something done with Snell and they're like, oh, we want to do one of those short-term deals, then it's, you know, if you give them, say, like $40 million as an AAV, then you're talking, what, like $44 million in tax? Yep. And so you're paying him like $84 million a year, essentially. I mean, Snell would only get the $40 million, but the Yankees would have to pay out that much. And so I think just the overall economic landscape this winter with the Diamond Sports Group bankruptcy is just making it so tough, because either teams are unaffected and they have spent already, you know, teams like the Yankees and Phillies already have spent a whole bunch of money, or the teams that are affected are just kind of sitting on the sidelines. And the compounding effect of that also is that some teams have been able to address their needs via trade. Instead of spending. So, like, you know, the Yankees traded for Soto and Grisham and Verdugo. You know, that took one of the best fits for Bellinger off the board, because, you know, a lot of people predicted coming into the offseason that the Yankees would sign Bellinger because they had, you know, Judge and nobody else in their outfield, but they were able to do it via trade because the Padres were looking to cut all this payroll. And then, you know, Atlanta got their left fielder from Seattle because they, you know, were, you know, they gave up Jared Kelnick to move the Evan White contract and the Marco Gonzalez thing because of their own TV revenue situation. And so it's just, it's tough to see even like, you know, on the short-term deals of like where, like who has the money and isn't going to be paying double because of the competitive balance tax. So let's talk about some of these teams because, you know, like so many different teams came out this week, showed up to spring training. They're like GM or president of baseball operations came out and basically said, yeah, no, I have no money in one way or another, which is what's there's like this staring contest with Boris where they're all going to at least say that they have no money, whether they do or not. So let's run through a couple of them who said this and see. Let's talk for a sec, at least how much we believe them. The Rangers. Chris Young, I think, came out and said, like, yeah, we're not going to make any more moves. Do we believe that one?
I believe it more so than some of the other ones. It seemed like a lot throughout the offseason. Like, it was pretty clear early on, I think, that they weren't going to spend a ton of money, certainly not at the levels they spent the last couple of off seasons when they were signing Corey Seager and Marcus Semien and John Gray and Jacob deGrom. Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they have been hyper aggressive, the most aggressive team in baseball in free agency over the past 24 months. And I think you kind of got the sense that at a certain point, like, that's going to have to slow down. I didn't think it would be off the heels of a World Series win, but the signals that they were kind of putting out early were, you know, we're gonna dial it back a little bit in free agency this offseason. We don't really know what's going on with the TV deal. I think Evan Grant with the Dallas Morning News, shout out to him, is about as good as it gets in terms of Rangers beat writers and you know, kind of being dialed into what's going on there. And he, from day one, basically this offseason, has been saying, you know, a lot of people in the national media are saying, hey, this Montgomery thing is kind of a fait accompli. It's going to happen. Like, they want him back. He wants to be back. But that's not actually rooted in reality. And maybe the Rangers really do want him back. Maybe Montgomery really wants to be back. But, you know, he's kind of raised questions about how much they're going to spend, particularly in terms of long-term risk, since the beginning of the offseason. And I do think we've seen that kind of play out. They've operated more on smaller scale one-year deals, kind of looked at the bullpen, and we haven't seen them make that huge free agent splash that they have over the past, you know, few years with the DeGroms and Seager and Semien, et cetera.
So then what about the Giants? I think it was Farhan Zaidi also said, probably not going to do anything else. Do you believe him?
I just have a hard time seeing it. If, like, this is really their plan, like, when they come into the offseason and say, we need to think differently about how we construct the roster, like, it hasn't been working, and they need to change things around. And then your solution to that is to, granted, to save some money, but they traded away some starting pitching depth. They got back Robbie Ray, who's not going to be a factor in the first half of the season. And so for the first half of the season, your rotation is going to be Logan Webb. And then they signed, you know, Jordan Hicks, who's one of the hardest throwing relievers in baseball, and are going to put him into the rotation, even though he's never thrown like 70 innings since his rookie season and is injured frequently in a relief role. I don't see how plugging him into the rotation is like a clear upgrade. Leaves them with a lot of question marks. And beyond that, like, Kyle Harrison's a really nice prospect, but he has thrown, you know, less than 40 innings in the majors. And then you're looking at guys like Keaton Wynn and Tristan Beck to maybe round it out. And Alex Cobb is still there, but he's going to miss the beginning of the season because of the hip surgery that he had in, I think, October, that he's still recovering from. I cannot fathom that, like, this is the offseason that they're going to have after they come out and say, you know, it's time for us to change our ways. There's just no way. Like, and if they're serious about competing, which I feel like, you know, the signing of Hicks and the signing of Jorge Soler, the signing of Jung Hoo Lee, all of that kind of suggests, like, hey, we want to be competitive. But I look at that rotation, and this is not a competitive rotation right now. Like, it's just not. And it doesn't necessarily mean they need to sign Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery and trade for Dylan Cease. But, like, I mean, you're telling me they won't even sign, you know, like a Michael Lorenzen or somebody to plug in there and just add some stability. I still love the fit for either Snell. I mean, Snell or Matt Chapman or Jordan Montgomery all fit really nicely in San Francisco, and they're not that close to the luxury tax or to their franchise record payroll. I question seriously whether they're just going to really throw their hands up and say, yep, this is our team, we like it. That one is particularly sketchy to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just, the rotation just looks unacceptable. I would be very surprised if that was that. You know, like you said, it could be Snell, it could be Montgomery, but, you know, Michael Lorenzen, like you mentioned, is still out there. Yeah, Mike Clevenger, there are pitchers they can go get.
Right. I can buy that they won't sign a 9-figure deal, I guess. I think they should. But, like, at the very least, like, you need another arm who is competent and somewhat reliable, even if it's just, hey, this guy's going to give us 130 to 150 decent innings, like Clevenger or Lorenzen. Like, that's big for that team right now.
Yeah. Okay, well, what about the Blue Jays? Ross Atkins also pulled out his pockets and moths flew out of them, and he said he was broke. Do we believe this one?
We're broke. It was just we're mostly broke, and if we're going to sign somebody, we need to get rid of some money, which kind of, you look at some of the dealings that they've made throughout the offseason and wonder, like, if that's the case, then did you need to give $15 million to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and some of these other kind of more questionable infielders that they've kind of stocked up on? Did you need to tender Santiago Espinal a contract, et cetera? everything I said about the Giants rotation, I kind of feel about the Blue Jays infield. I look at like some of the names that they are just going to, obviously Bo Bichette's a star, like they're, and Vlad Guerrero, like you hope for a bounce back season at first base from him. And yeah, they went and got Justin Turner, who can play some third base, but he's not going to play there regularly at his age. He didn't last year with the Red Sox, and he'll, you know, he might give you 500 innings or so at third base or something like that. I still look at them and I'm just like, again, as Chapman sits out there and as, you know, the 6 years and 6 year deal or 5 year deal that I think a lot of people thought was going to be waiting for him early in the offseason is not there. I just increasingly wonder, you know, is there some kind of way that they can sort something out and bring him back? Because I do think it's just like a really nice fit on paper. And yeah, the Jays are, you know, kind of in franchise record payroll territory. And I understand that, but they've been really ramping up the payroll over the past few years. And if they do really need to move some money, they probably have some smaller scale guys that they can move around and shuffle around a little bit. And you can always backload a contract. I just think there are enough questions there. And the AL East is so competitive that I would be surprised, especially with the expectations they had coming into the offseason. Like, you were trying to sign Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and now you're going to say, oh, but we're out of money after signing, you know, IKF and a bunch of smaller scale moves, Yariel Rodriguez. I don't really buy that. You're up in Toronto. What's your take on the situation?
I mean, from the roster perspective, everything you said makes sense, but they are also at franchise record payroll. So,
yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of stopping point. I mean, every club has a budget, even though the Jays are owned by a huge corporation. But yeah, I mean, they've clearly, unless you really, really believe in the young guys that are coming up from the farm system, the Orelvis Martinez type guys, they're clearly worse than they were last year because they've lost Chapman in this. He's still out there, but they've lost him in the sense that he's not on the team anymore. And Merrifield and Belt. And if you consider Justin Turner more or less a wash for Belt, and maybe you consider IKF a wash with Merrifield, kind of generous to IKF, but
I think so, but yeah.
Even if you give them a wash on that, the loss of Chapman clearly puts them down relative to the 2023 club, which only barely snuck into the playoffs. And then you also combine that with the fact that the rotation was incredibly healthy last year, and they can't possibly expect that level of rotation health this right. year. Bringing back Chapman at least gets you back to where you were last year, whereas now they're clearly below. But let's get to another one. Artie Moreno also came out and said that he's not going to spend at the same level as before. So he's also out of money, perhaps. What do we think about this one?
You know, the Angels owner, for those who are unfamiliar right. with the many trials and tribulations of Artie Moreno over the years. That's another one that I look at. And I just, first off, like, his comments were worded a little differently. A lot of, you know, like Chris Young said, I wouldn't expect any further additions. Ross Atkins kind of said, oh, if we add somebody, it's going to have to be if we subtract somebody else. Like, Moreno just said, we're going to operate at a lower budget. Which leaves some room for potential additions still. Their payroll last year was, maybe it wasn't a record. I think they were in the 200s, though, and they don't usually go up that high. So I think they ended the year around $210 million, $215 million, and they're sitting around $170 right now. So there is still some wiggle room for his comment to be true, and they also still bring in somebody. The bigger question for me with Moreno is that he has just typically been somebody who doesn't operate in, he doesn't green light long-term deals for starting pitchers. You know, the 3-year deal that they gave to Tyler Anderson last offseason, which blew up spectacularly in year one and probably doesn't make him feel any better about, you know, multi-year deals for starting pitchers. That was the first time they'd signed a starting pitcher to a multi-year deal since Joe Blanton a decade ago, and he signed a 2-year contract. The last time the Angels signed a starting pitcher for more than 3 years was the 5-year deal that they gave to CJ Wilson, and that was, I believe, like 12 years ago now. That's a long time. So they haven't typically operated in that arena. I think he may, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's you know, you worry about pitcher injury and attrition, but I mean, Moreno has had no problem shelling out, you know, long-term deals to Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton and Anthony Rendon and like a lot of, you know, long-term deals for position players that have not gone very well. So I kind of look at it and it's, well, you can't do much worse than you've done on some of these position player contracts. And you have an obvious need in the rotation. You know, they lost Otani. Perry Minasian, their general manager, kicked off the offseason saying that they were going to be aggressive and they're not going into a rebuild. And since then, really, all they've done is kind of tinker with the bullpen. I feel like, again, especially if some of these, you know, the 6-year deal that maybe Montgomery was looking for becomes more of like a 5-year deal in the low 100s, like the Angels are a team that makes sense to me to kind of jump up and say, all right, like this has fallen into a point that we're comfortable with and we do have this need. And, you know, we still have some nice pieces in the core and some nice young players coming up. I can see them saying, you know, we don't really want to just punt on the year here. And Jordan Montgomery type or Blake Snell, especially, you know, really helps us replace Otani in the rotation. I look at that and I can't fully buy into the fact that the Angels just say like, OK, what, you know, we're done with this offseason yet.
OK, well, it's all going to be fascinating to watch because Boris represents all four of them and J.D. Martinez.
J.D. Martinez gets a little left out here. Like, I know he's not going to get the 9-figure deal, but he still had 30-something home runs last year and is like a pretty prominent name. And yeah, he's another high-end Boris guy who's kind of just sitting around waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. And so all these guys looking for homes, looking for contracts, Boris, it's a tricky juggling act because, you know, we've talked with all these teams of like, oh, yeah, maybe the Angels can fit this guy in or the Giants can fit this guy in. Each deal that Boris agrees to could theoretically make the next deal harder to do because he cuts off a revenue source for one guy by giving it to another guy. So anyway,
yeah, I don't think there's. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's. I don't know what the heck he's going to do it, but I look forward to watching.
I don't think there's many teams that can afford. Well, I mean, they afford is a. I don't think there's many teams that will spend to bring in two of these guys at this point. You know, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if we see any unexpected team kind of step up the way that the Twins did with Correa a couple of years ago, because I think, you know, something like that. Whether it's, you know, the Royals or the Diamondbacks find enough money to make one more, you know, push for their rotation. I saw Joel Sherman wrote in the New York Post today, like that he's like, you know, I'm not ruling the Twins out on one of Snell or Montgomery, given that they did this with Correa 2 years ago and that, you know, they have the need in the rotation and the TV deal there is at least settled for 2024 now, which is a decent point. I struggle to see that, but I think we're going to see some team, you know, that probably few people would have expected end up with at least one of these guys.
Okay. Oakland A's, step right up.
You heard it here first. Quote me. No, please don't.
Well, let's talk. I mean, not really about Boris, the Boris Four. There's other stuff going on.
There is.
We can maybe tie it into this club if we feel like it. But, you know, the Washington Nationals, some big news on that front recently because for almost 2 years now, they've had a for sale sign outside of the club, just swaying in the breeze on the lawn there. And then the owner came out this week and said, actually, no, JK, they're off the block. I was just kidding. So the Nationals are not for sale, and we don't really know what they're doing. You wrote a piece for front office subscribers this week. And, you know, if you're not signed up for the front office package, let me just quickly hype it here. It's cheap. You get rid of the ads and Steve Adams will jump into your email and tell you why the Nationals suck every once in a while. Well, no, you did say this, but like, do you want to summarize what you said for our listeners who maybe haven't read the piece?
Yeah, I mean, first off, they're another team, you know, Mike Rizzo, their general manager, longtime general manager and president of baseball operations. He's another executive who said last week, basically, you know, if we make any more additions, it's probably going to be on the minor league non-roster side. We're likely done adding major league free agents. I don't have his exact words in front of me, so I am paraphrasing. Hopefully he does not get angry at that. But you look at the offseason that they've had, and it started off like at the winter meetings, you know, Rizzo kind of said, hey, we're going to, you know we have holes on this team. We need to be active in filling those. And he even mentioned, you know, if it makes sense, like we'll be right there. We're comfortable doing multi-year deals. And they followed that by doing almost nothing. They signed Joey Gallo, Nick Senzel, and Dylan Floro for a combined, I think, $9.25 million, all 1 year deals, $5 million or less. You know, and Rizzo's comment last week was that, you know, he was just searching for the starting pitching market and trying to find that guy who could impact us and line up with you know, their market expectations and all this, and the deal just wasn't there. And I look at the rotation that they have right now, which is Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore, Patrick Corbin, Trevor Williams, and Jake Irvin. And they don't have much coming down the pipeline in terms of, you know, MLB ready, like high end pitching prospects. They do have Cade Cavalli, who is a top 100 type of arm, former first round pick, who would have been in the rotation last year, but he underwent Tommy John surgery in March. He's going to be back this year, but he'll probably not right at the beginning of the year. And also, assuredly on an innings limit. And they have, you know, a few starters in the upper minors, Jackson Rutledge, DJ Hers, but it's not a deep group. You know, they have, since I wrote that, they did sign Zach Davies to a minor league deal, which helps with the depth a little bit and gives them the potential for some kind of average-ish innings at the back of the rotation. But they, like, I look at that rotation, they are one pitching injury, and certainly, you know, if they incur two injuries in that rotation, it's a catastrophe, in that they don't even have much in the way of depth arms to come up and kind of just plug the holes and fill the gaps. You know, I think a guy kind of in that Jake Irvin mold is probably more the type of guy, you know, 27 years old, like not great strikeout or walk numbers, you know, several seasons in AAA under his belt. He's the guy you kind of want to call up in that spot where it's like, oh man, we've lost two or three starters and we really need to be, you know, tapping deep down into the depth chart here. He's not somebody you want, I think, necessarily, you know, no disrespect to him, obviously, but like not somebody you want penciled in as your number four starter to begin the off season. And you look at the Nationals payroll now versus where it was at its all time high, you know, they're 50 something million dollars, maybe more away from their franchise record. And to say that, you know, we couldn't find that that guy who was going to impact us here. No, they don't need to go sign Blake Snell. It doesn't make sense with their competitive window, whatever. Fine, I get that. But like, again, I mean, even, you know, Michael Lorenzen is sitting out there. You know, Hyunjin Ryu is going back to the Korea now, which makes sense as to perhaps why he didn't sign with one of these teams that could use some innings at the back of the rotation. But there's been, I mean, even just like signing Martin Perez for a year and you know, $9 million or something, like outbidding the Pirates by $1 million, like that would have made sense for this team. They are the rotation is like so perilously thin.
Sign Zach Greinke, sign Johnny Cueto, sign somebody.
Right. Like just like they need something in the end. They did go sign Zach Davies after I said that, or after I wrote this, but like that again, he's coming off of a 7-something ERA in a really rough season with the Diamondbacks. Like I think there was room and probably should have been motivation to bring in somebody more stable. You know, worst case scenario, everyone knows they probably won't contend, but like, hey, they did this last year with Jamer Candelario. Like they signed him for a year, $5 million. They flipped him for a couple of guys at the deadline, one of them being DJ Hers, who I mentioned as kind of one of the depth starters that they have right now. But there's no reason, you know, financially speaking, or, you know, from a roster standpoint, that I can see that this team wouldn't bring in just some quality innings at the back of the rotation. And I think, you know, if you're a Nationals fan, it's a letdown after, you know, just 2 months ago or 2.5 months ago, you had Rizzo out there kind of saying, hey, you know, we have holes on this team and we're going to address them. It doesn't feel like they've addressed them much. And it seems, you know, like they're kind of barreling for their, I think this will be their fourth straight 90 loss season. If it plays out that way, you know, they're kind of entering the fourth or the year of this like full scale rebuild, and the farm system isn't elite. It has some really, really high end prospects at the very top of it. But again, one injury or one, you know, one guy's career kind of not going the way that they expected really changes the trajectory of the organization right now. It looked like there was some opportunity for this team to make some short-term moves to get better at not that big of a cost. And they have just chosen not to, even though their GM kind of said that he probably would. And I think that's just unfortunate for Nationals fans.
And I think those fans will start to ask questions a little bit more loudly now that the team is not for sale, because I think previously you could have at least shrugged it off and said like, oh yeah, they're not spending anything because they're trying to sell the team and keeping the books clear, all that kind of stuff. But now that they're not selling the team, well, then it's like, okay, well then what are you doing? What's your plan going forward?
Right. Give me something. That kind of begs the question of like, okay, well, was, you know, the kind of quiet off season predicated on exactly what you just said. And now that they do have some money left and that they, you know, there are still some of these guys out there, like, what do you see the Nationals kind of surprise everyone and say, hey, you know, we're $60 million away for $50 million, whatever it is, away from our franchise record payroll. Our rotation is in shambles. We all know that the Lerner family has a good relationship with Scott Boris. He's had, half the Nationals roster was Boris clients at a certain point, between Scherzer and Strasburg and Rendon and Harper. And I'm missing so many more. But like, that was just one of his go-to teams. And yeah, like, they are somebody who I don't think anybody thinks the Nationals need to go sign, you know, Jordan Montgomery for $110 million or something right now. But if the price gets to that point, like, that's a team that makes a lot of sense to kind of jump into that market and say, hey, we think we're going to start to have some really good young players coming up in 2025 or late 2024. Just like we kind of jump started the rebuild last time with signing Jason Wirth to that 7-year contract that nobody was ready for. You know, what if we went out and kind of kickstarted this by bringing in a Jordan Montgomery? That makes some sense to me. I don't know that it's reasonable to expect, but I, you know, it's certainly a question that's worth keeping in mind, following basically the announcement that like, nope, we're not going to sell. We're going to hang on to the team. It creates some interesting questions to keep an eye on moving forward.
Okay. Well, you heard it from this podcast, the Royals, the A's and the Nationals are going to help Boris out in the next few weeks. Book it. So we got a couple of minutes left here, and we would be remiss if we didn't at least mention the Rob Manfred news. Because it's going to take a few years to play out, but it's a significant thing that's going to be sort of hanging in the air, like cosmic background radiation or whatever. Because he said that he is not going to. He said this is going to be his last term. His contract, I think, goes through January of 2029, so another 5 years. But he said he's done after that. So what does that mean?
I think a lot of fans took a celebratory approach to this, and we're very excited. It's not a secret that Manfred is not popular among baseball fans. Many of them think that he does not like baseball very much, and he has a tendency to do things like refer to the World Series trophy as a piece of metal, which doesn't really inspire confidence that like he actually is passionate about baseball. You know, he has a tendency certainly to put his foot in his mouth, you know, that comment or things like, you know, how investing in the stock market would actually be more profitable than owning a baseball team. There's a buffet of questionable Manfred comments from over the years that you can choose from. But I also think that a lot of the people who are celebrating, you know, okay, hey, 5 more years and then we get somebody new, are probably going to be in for something of a rude awakening. I think there's this perception that the baseball commissioner is some kind of like, or should be some kind of steward of the game with the fans' interest at heart and all this. And it's really not. It's just a figurehead position. He's the negotiating, you know, figurehead for the owners. Like his job is to represent the owners at the bargaining table and draw a hard line against players. And like, yes, there's the competition committee and rule changes and all these other things that he has his hands in. But at the end of the day, like the core principle of his job is to make money for the owners. And so I don't think that the next person who inherits the job, whether it's, you know, somebody who's been a longtime lieutenant of his, a Morgan Sword or whoever, or even if it's, you know, Theo Epstein steps up and becomes the commissioner, as so many people have speculated, I think, you know, fans are going to kind of have a similar opinion of that next commissioner before too long, because the name doing the job can change, but the key function is going to remain the same. He's still going to work for the owners. There's still going to be plenty of contentious back and forth with the players union. We'll probably have threats of labor stoppage, if not lockouts, you know, for God knows how long. It's just that I feel like that's always going to be a piece of the dynamic between the ownership and the players. And putting a new name and a new person in that role isn't necessarily going to change that. Hopefully, whoever it is, like I said, maybe they, you know, kind of stick their foot in their mouth a little less often than Mr. Manfred has over the years. But I don't know that it's going to bring about the sweeping changes that some people are probably hoping for. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that general framing is fair. The commissioner does work for the owners and try to make them profit. I do wonder, it's interesting. I saw there was a piece from Evan Drellich at the Athletic this week wondering why Manfred was so open about the fact that he's leaving. And, you know, maybe it is just another instance of him putting his foot in his mouth because, you know, he hasn't always chosen his words carefully. But I don't know. I mean, it would be fascinating if he cared about the fact that people don't like him and tried with his lame duck status to do something interesting on the way out the door. Not that I have faith that he would do that, but there is still lots of stuff going on with, like, trying to make baseball more accessible via streaming and, yeah, you know, expansion and all of this stuff that's sort of, you know, constantly in the air when Manfred's name comes up. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see if his behavior changes at all now that he's sort of just put it out there. It's, you know, like it's like the person who's, you know, put in their notice at work. You know, they might start stealing pens or something because they don't care if they get fired anymore. I don't know. It's interesting.
It is. And I think, you know, that it's probably true that a lot of his prior decisions and prior comments were made under the backdrop of, hey, I want to get, you know, I want another 5-year, you know, term basically in this role. So I need to make sure that I'm doing, you know, the best that I can for the owners and, you know, et cetera. And yeah, if that's not his end game anymore, then I think we would all, every fan would welcome some kind of streaming alternative or some kind of just making the games more accessible, I feel like would be the biggest win. And hopefully if there's one thing that he decides he wants to make the like last stamp of his legacy or whatever you want to call it, if that's the route he chooses to go and say, hey, this is one of the things that I want to be remembered for, I think that would be fantastic. And that's something that that every fan can get behind. So fingers crossed for that.
Okay, well, that's all the time that we have for this episode. Steve, thank you so much for hanging out with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and we'll do it again soon, I am sure.
So fans out there, still lots of signings to happen. What's going to happen with these Boris 4? Keep it locked on MLBTradeRumors.com. Keep hitting that refresh button to see what's going on. And like I said, sign up for the front office package to get extra analysis and get rid of those ads. And we will have another podcast episode for you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLBTradeRumors.